I call Senate Resources Committee meeting to order. Today is Monday, March 2nd, 2026, and the time is 3:30 p.m. Please turn off your cell phones. Committee members present today, Senator Rauscher, Senator Myers, Senator Klayman. Senator Dunbar is on the phone, and I am Senator Giesel. I expect Vice Chair Wilikowski to be along shortly. Senator Kawasaki is excused as he has bills up in another committee. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Heather and Jude, who are helping us out recording the minutes and making the audio functional. Today we have two items on the agenda. We'll start out with a presentation on the bonding authority of ADA, the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. And secondly, we will have a second hearing with public testimony on Senate Bill 158, Cook Inlet, new administrative areas. So, first up, the bonding authority of ADA. I will invite Mr. Randy Raro, Executive Director of ADA, and Kent Sullivan, General Counsel, to the table. On the phone is Mark Davis, who is Special Counsel to the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. So, welcome, gentlemen. I think you've done this before, so you know to introduce yourself for the record as you change speakers. I do note that the first 14 slides are basically rewriting, presenting to us the statutes that exist. So I would ask you to expeditiously go through those. We do have a second bill hearing in this committee after you're finished with your presentation. So welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Randy Ruaro, R-U-A-R-O. I'm the executive director for ADA.
Good afternoon, Senate Resources Committee. My name is Kent Sullivan, Sullivan, S-U-L-L-I-V-A-N. I'm general counsel for ADA.
Very good.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll commence with the presentation, and I know the first 14 pages, as you mentioned, are largely excerpts of text from ADA's bonding authority. It was my understanding that the committee was interested in those legal limits and qualifications on ADA's bonding authority. So I apologize for the text got kind of small in some pages, but I thought it was important to try to walk through it all. So slide page number two. I started with this text from the Alaska Constitution, and the thought was, Madam Chair, that this is the highest level of law that we have in the state. And I wanted to note for the committee that there is an exception to the bonding requirements in the state constitution in Article 9, Section 11, specifically for public corporations of the state or a political subdivision. And this exception does apply to ADA and other state corporations, which all of whom I think AHFC, AEA contain similar language in their organic statutes. And that exception is for revenue bonds where the only source of repayment is receipts of the entity. Slide three, AS 4488020 creates ADA. It goes back to 1961, I believe. We've been around quite a while. And this statute makes it clear that ADA is a public corporation for purposes of the constitutional exception and a political subdivision, but with a separate and independent legal existence. Slide number four, that separate and independent legal existence is important in the context of bonding because the state assets, the state pledge, state receipts are not pledged for ADA bonds. ADA bonds are separated from state debt by the operation of the statutes, and you'll see that theme repeated throughout the statutes that the legislature wanted ADA to be separated, a wall between ADA and some operations of the legislature, some control, so that the entity ADA could support issuing debt and not have the moral obligation of the state or the legal obligation of the state tied to its decisions. So it kept those two things separate. This statute on slide 4, 190A, makes it clear that we are a political subdivision, except for certain requirements. One is the Executive Budget Act, and that for all other purposes, we are considered a state agency, except with a couple other exceptions that follow on other slides. Slide 5, 4488, 190B, the funds, income, or receipts of the authority are not considered money of the state, and real property of the authority is not considered owned by the state. And again, I think what the legislature was doing back in 1961 and 1967 with these statutes was building this entity that would have some autonomy, enough autonomy to not commingle, I guess, assets and liability of the state for bonding and revenue decisions with the decisions of the ADA entity. Slide 6, bonds of the authority. This statute, again, I apologize for the small text, but this statute provides ADA with statutory authority to issue bonds issued by resolution. That means the board has to approve the bonds. Our bonds are considered negotiable instruments, may be sold at a public or private sale. That's subdivision D. And we can combine more than one project into a bond offering.
Before you go on, pause for one moment on slide 6. Senator Willikowski had a question.
Thank you. When was the last time ADA issued bonds, and how much were they for?
Through the chair, Senator Willikowski, the answer is it depends. If you're thinking of revenue bonds, we've issued bonds for some of the health facilities, Tananaw Chiefs Hospital, and the YK Bethel Hospital, I believe, and Mr. Davis is available to correct me if he needs to, but I believe that was roughly a decade ago, 8 to 10 years ago, somewhere in that vicinity. I wasn't working at ADA when those were issued. I know they were issued. Mr. Davis was at the time lead on those projects at ADA. I think he's online if you need a detailed date.
I don't, but if I have
Senator Willikowski,
separate question, if I could, Madam Chair, just going back to your statements about autonomy and being autonomous from the legislature, would you say you're autonomous from the executive branch as well, or how much coordination is there with other executive branch departments, with the governor's office, with other executive branch officials?
Sure. So through the chair, Senator Willikowski, in statute, it is set out that all actions or on business of ADA is decided upon by the board. The board consists of 7 members, 2 of which are executive branch agency officials, the commissioner of commerce and the commissioner of revenue or their designee. The other 5 positions are basically members of the public. They all have to be qualified in business. They have to have business experience by statute, and they have to make decisions, again, by statute that comply with the reasonable and prudent person standard. So I would say that the board is a fairly independent board and applies that standard. Staff's job, my job, I guess, and staff is to make sure we've done all the underwriting correctly, the economic analysis. And for example, on the Alyeskim project, that we spent more than a year studying that project and working through all the potential issues and negotiating, you know, the very best agreement that we could for ADA.
Follow-up, Senator Willikowski.
And do you ever coordinate with the executive branch, with the governor's office in particular, before you make decisions on funding or which projects you're going to undertake or support?
Through the chair, Senator Willikowski, I can't recall an instance where there was a communication for example, with the governor's office or governor about a decision that was up for our agenda for a project.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
So your testimony is, in the time you've been there, you have never coordinated with the governor's office on a project or discussed with the governor's office any projects?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that, in my view, that's a different question than whether the board is or I have communicated with the governor on a decision, a formal decision on the agenda. Have I ever talked to the governor about a project? Yes, I have. Those projects have not been before the board for an official decision.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, which projects did you coordinate or did you discuss with the governor's office?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I've talked with the governor's office about projects or concepts that could involve the development of Alaska's coal resources. I've talked with the governor's office about projects that could involve the development of data centers. I've talked with the governor's office about projects relating to AKLNG. So I've had, I do speak with members of the governor's staff about projects, concepts, perhaps more than individual projects.
All right. I see no further questions. I'll let you proceed.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Slide 7, bonding limits. There are some statutory limits for ADA bonds. The authority may not issue bonds in a 12-month period in an amount that exceeds $400 million. So we do have some dollar limits that we comply with. There are some other dollar limits as well that apply to specific fund sources when we're using that fund source for bonds. One of those is the $25 million limit in sub G for projects that are financed under the economic development account, a maximum of $25 million. Beyond that, we would have to come back to the legislature and get statutory authority, which has been done, multiple times in the past for different projects. Sometimes that authority goes unused. Sometimes it is used, as in the case of Red Dog Road and Port. There's unused authority on the books for different projects over the years. Again, Mr. Davis would have a knowledge of that long list, but occasionally the authority is given and not used.
Senator Klayman.
I know this is a little bit back onto slide 6, but remind me and the public that's listening, how are the ADA members, the board members appointed, not the two commissioners, but the other five, how are they appointed? Are they confirmed by the legislature? And does the governor have the power to remove those? Well, just those first two, how are they appointed and are they confirmed?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, the members of the board, the non-commissioner members, are appointed through an application process at boards and commissions by the governor.
Follow-up, Senator Klayman.
And subject to confirmation by the legislature or not subject to confirmation?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, they are not subject to confirmation.
Follow-up.
And again, this is just so the public understands the makeup of the board. Mm-hmm. And so that effectively means when the governor appoints five public members to the board, the governor has the authority a year later to say you're off the board and put somebody else in. So largely those five public members are whoever the governor wants on the board at any time.
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, I believe that's correct. There is no limitation that I'm aware of on the governor's removal authority, such that he could only remove a member for cause. So I believe you're correct.
Thank you.
Senator Myers.
No, thank you. Sherrar, that $400 million yearly limit, when's the last time that got altered?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, I'm not sure it's ever been amended.
No.
The largest bonds, I think, that have been issued by ADA that were not conduit revenue bonds were, I believe, for the Red Dog Road and Port, and that was well below the $400 million. I think it was $175 million back in 1987.
Okay, thank you.
All right. I see no further questions. Are we on slide 8 now?
Yes, ma'am.
Very good.
Through the chair, slide 8 just sets out when ADA does issue bonds, it has to establish a capital reserve fund in an amount that's adequate. That is a requirement that usually results in a reserve fund that's about one-third of the total amount of the bonds issued. So it's a significant amount. Slide 9, AS 4488-110, validity of the pledge of bonds. This statute sets out that the legislature is acknowledging bonds pledges are valid and binding contracts. The money so pledged immediately subject to the lien of the pledge. Again, this is somewhat technical, but it does set out again a little bit of the background of the separation between the state and the acknowledging that ADA has this ability to issue bonds that are really the bonds of the authority and not the state treasury. Slide 10, this statute 4488-120 just sets out the non-liability on bonds by the members of the authority, personally liable. Bonds issued by the authority, this is 120 sub B, makes it clear that ADA bonds are not indebtedness or another liability of the state or a political subdivision of the state. So, again, keeping some separation between the state of Alaska Treasury and the ADA bond efforts. Slide 11, AS 4488-130. This is a pledge of the state to respect the ADA bonds, that it won't take actions to impair the rights and remedies of the holders of the bonds. And this gives confidence, I guess, to purchasers of ADA bonds that these bonds are safe investment. And that it's a good investment and won't be somehow amended or changed after they purchase the bonds. So once they bought the bonds, the bondholders can rest fairly secure that there won't be a legislative act to change the terms of the contract. Slide 12, Madam Chair. Perhaps doesn't relate to bonding directly, but it, again, just setting out ADA's property is exempt from taxation. So we are a bit of a hybrid entity. We're a subdivision of the state, but with a separate existence. So we do carry a tax exemption authority with us. Slide 13, Madam Chair, is AS 4488-150. Bonds are legal investments, securities. So our bonds are on a par with other entities, a state that issues bonds. Our powers on slide 14 expressly include the authority to issue bonds and incur indebtedness and to enter into contracts to carry out our corporate purposes, which are really economic development and job creation. So as long as we're staying within those bounds, we are able to enter into contracts, including bond issuances of bonds for those purposes. That's a summary of our bond statutes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Riaro. Any other questions from committee members? Yes, Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. The as you know, there was a report issued a few years ago about the that was critical of ADA, and they one of the things they found in that it was Milt Barker and Greg Erickson and Associates, and one of the things they found in that report was that of the 39 ADA loan participations funded in the 16 months prior to October 31, 2020, 48% of the dollars were for loans that added no permanent jobs and 65% entailed no construction jobs. Is that those numbers sound right to you?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, those numbers I don't believe are accurate. I would have to refer to our somewhat detailed and lengthy rebuttal report to pull out the exact statistics, but I can provide what we believe are the accurate numbers to you and the committee.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski?
Yeah, and the other finding that they made was that the state had, since 1980, invested $301 million to ADA, and that had that money been invested in the permanent fund, that would be worth $11.4 billion. And at the time, your net worth at ADA was $1.4 billion for a $10 billion difference. That those numbers sound right to you?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, again, I believe our Northern Economics rebuttal report came back with very different figures. I'll have to pull those, and I can provide them in a follow-up letter to the committee. But we think that, if I could just add, Chair, that the measure of ADA as well is not just an economic return, because we're created to do other things, such as invest in projects like Red Dog, which produces benefits, financial benefits, you know, beyond just a pure economic return to ADA. So roughly $2 billion in 7i revenue produced from Red Dog, $50 million in PILT. I mean, there's a, I guess it's, it might be part in how you measure the return, what you define as the return from ADA investments. You could define it narrowly as purely a rate of return, as if it had been invested in equities, but the others may view the return from ADA's investments as something much broader that includes returns to local communities, returns to ANCSA corporations, and provides returns to the state in terms of property tax and royalties. So it's a bit in the definition, I guess, but I'd be happy to put together some sort of a letter response to those.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkerson?
Yeah, thank you. And I think the Northern Economics Report you're referring to is this one that was released in just a couple months ago, January 2026. Is that
through,
right?
Through the chair, Senator, yes.
And if I could, Madam Chair.
Yes.
When was this report completed?
It was issued, or I'm sorry, through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. It was issued and turned out publicly, I would say, within days of being completed.
And
follow up.
Was there a report that was provided to you from Northern Economics back in 2024?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, what ADA received were drafts, and had the opportunity to comment back to the contractor of areas that we thought needed to be filled out. And so there was quite a bit of back and forth with the contractor on items, for example, like the Red Dog project. There were some assertions that the project would have gone forward without ADA's participation. We had to go back and thoroughly review CAMECO's annual reports. We had to review the legislature's committee notes and hearing notes from when they approved the bonds, and actually met with Willie Hensley, you know, to get his views. We wanted to make sure we had a pretty strong factual basis in our version of the report, and it took us a fair amount of time to frankly do all that research, and it took a fair amount of time between drafts to get drafts back. So I know the report dragged. And then we also had to update it for our, as time was passing, our financials were becoming available, our audited financials. So we wanted the report to incorporate, you know, the newest information as well. So,
follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. And I know, this report was supposed to be, quote, independent and quote, unbiased. And, it seems odd that it was a year and a half of back and forth for what was supposed to be an independent and unbiased report. So I'm wondering, in the interest of transparency and fairness, if ADA would be willing to provide us with a copy of the 2024 original draft that was provided by Northern Economics.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I can go back and take a look at that. I can assure you that we didn't direct or tell the contractor to change any facts in his report version drafts. What we were doing was saying, you know, look, there's a point that was made in the attacking report on ADA. We'd like you to take a look at those issues. Here's what we think would be important facts, such as, you know, the legislative history of the votes on the bonds that were issued for Red Dog, the annual reports of Cameco that showed their financial status was very poor in 1982 and 83, and that they needed the assistance from ADA. And then actually speaking with some of the former members of the legislature, the executive branch, like Mr. Hensley, who assured us that, you know, without ADA's assistance, the project wouldn't have gone forward. So it's time consuming to push back on allegations such as, you know, the project would have gone forward without ADA. It's time consuming to go do and find that research and provide it. But we wanted the clearest facts possible.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
And so you would be willing to provide us with the original draft from 2024 along with the changes or questions that you asked or facts that you provided to the Northern Economics?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I'll take a look at all the reports and the back and forth. I don't know that there's any reason we couldn't, if there's any, I guess, debate or discussion in between members at ADA, but I'm not certain there's any objection to providing that.
Thank you, Mr. Roro. You can certainly send that to my office. We'll distribute it to the full committee. Did you have further follow-up, Senator Wilikowski? Senator Klayman.
This is a follow-up on Senator Wilikowski's questions. Has ADA ever taken the position that its internal discussions as a public corporation are confidential and not something the legislature is entitled to know about?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, by statute, ADA is considered a subdivision of the state, similar to agencies, state agencies. And so I guess our position would be that we are entitled to deliberative and executive privilege amongst ourselves and our attorneys, attorney-client privilege. I believe that has been claimed in the past. I'd have to look up when and if it was claimed.
Follow up, Senator Klayman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What about something like the report that Senator Wilikowski, the draft report Senator Wilikowski is asking about? Is that something that you think there's any basis for ADA to claim that this is a confidential document that the public is not entitled to see?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, my understanding of the Public Records Act as it applies to state agencies is that there is some protection for the ability of agency staff and personnel to discuss and talk about a draft report, and then the final is issued and it is public. I'd have to go back and take a look at that case law and statutes on what exactly it says, or if Kent has some thoughts, he can provide a few thoughts.
Kent?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, Kent Sullivan, General Counsel with ADA, Sullivan, S-U-L-L-I-V-A-N. I don't have any additional thoughts. I do know that we have claimed privilege in the past on a variety of issues. As to this particular report and what may or may not be claimed, I don't have any additional information at this time. As Ms. Ferraro said, we'd have to take a look at that and see.
Mark Davis is also online if you wish to inquire of him. Senator Klayman?
If he has anything to add, I'd appreciate hearing his thoughts.
Mr. Davis, do you have anything to add?
No, ma'am. This is Mark Davis for the record, and I don't have anything to add. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Follow up further, Senator Klayman?
No questions. I just note, Madam Chair, that I do think a report that is this extensive, if there was a draft, that's something that we ought to be able to see.
Thank you. Any further questions? Senator Wilikowski.
On the Public Records Act, does the Alaska Public Records Act apply to ADA?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, ADA has its own separate Public Records Act statute, which protects financial information and other materials that's produced by a applicant for a loan, for example, tax returns, things like that. But in addition, the Public Records Act, I believe, does still apply to ADA. So we have a specific statute that provides certain exemptions that may be broader than the Public Records Act. And then we have the broader version of the Public Records Act. But I believe both apply.
All right, very good. I don't see further questions. You have some additional slides.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just some general background slides quickly. I know the committee's pressed for time. Slide 16, FY 2025 financials. We produce roughly gross revenue of over $100 million, roughly $70 million in net revenue, statutory net income of $67.4 million. Our dividends provided since 1997, went over half a billion. And we're providing this year for the state budget $17 million in an aided dividend plus $6.5 million in revenue sharing through the ANWR leases, so $23.5 million. And I'm really confident that I think our dividend's going to continue increasing. I think the net revenue and gross revenue are going to continue increasing. We've got some projects coming online between the Alyeskum methanol plant and the Hex Cook Inlet gas drilling. And we've got several other really, I think, positive potential investments that will add to what should be an increasing rate of return for the state and ADA.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. Question?
Thank you. On the dividends, so that's $17 million dividends on total assets of $1.75 billion. By my calculation, that comes to 0.0097%, less than a percent rate of return. Does that sound about right?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I can't question the math that you just provided. I would say that we are in compliance with state statute for the dividend brackets, which the board must follow. And I can advise that the board was very aware this year when setting the dividend amount of the mega projects that are facing ADA and the potential of advancing ANWR, which could return as much as $2 billion a year to the state in royalties and production tax, and the Ambler Road, which would produce additional hundreds of millions of dollars. So it was a policy call by the board as set out in statute, but I can say that one of the reasons the dividend went to the lower end of the bracket are these large projects that are facing ADA, some of the largest projects in state history that we're hoping to bring to a successful development and bring hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, to the state treasury through those projects.
I see no further questions. Oh, Senator Klayman.
So first I want to take a look at two of the projects you mentioned. First, the Ambler Road. What is the timeline? As I understand it, ADA started the process, but they'll eventually make money on it when the road is built. What is the timeline that ADA is currently looking at when ADA believes that road will be built?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Klayman. So with President Trump's ANILCA's Section 1106 decision, all federal permits are now in our hands, and we have site control, so to speak, of the route through the state of Alaska's right away as well. We're working on geotechnical work this year with the hope of advancing into construction next year. It's probably a 2 or 3 year construction window, so we're probably looking at 4 to 5 years out.
Follow-up.
Specific to the Ambler Road, is it your understanding of the plan that ADA will be funding the entire construction of the road, or will you be depending on mining companies that have projects out there to provide funding that actually helps do the construction of the road?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Klayman. So ADA's plan, or what I would recommend as a plan, there's a couple different options that are different than when the Red Dog project went forward. The Red Dog mine road and port went forward with a commitment from the mining companies to cover the costs of the bonds. And that is a route we would pursue again with the Ambler Road. We would not proceed without an assurance by the mining companies that they would pay for the financing and the debt needed to build the project. However, because the mines are going to produce critical minerals, there is another alternative available now through the Department of Energy called the Section 1703 program, where ADA, as a state energy financing entity, can put in 5% of the project cost. Private sector can put in 15% of the project cost. and the federal government will issue a loan for 80% of the project cost. So there's some different options available this year, but or at this time compared to Red Dog, but we would pursue a Red Dog model where the mines have to commit before we go forward, or we would pursue a model with a Department of Energy participation loan and a much lower amount of equity pledged by the mines and 5% to ADA.
Follow-up, Senator Clement?
So with respect to the a point in time in which the mines are ready, let's take the scenario where there's not the federal money available, where ADA is essentially looking for the mining companies to put the money or bond, come up with bonding for the road construction. What is the timeline in ADA's perspective of when the mining companies are likely to be in a position to make those decisions and commit to the bonding?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Clayman, we're hoping and planning for presenting the mines with a cost estimate mid next year, and believe that the with the exploration that's being conducted this year and the economic analysis and delineation at both Bornite and the Arctic mine and possibly some of the others, we think they'll be in a position to make that decision by mid-27.
Follow-up, Senator Clayman.
Will, if only one of those projects goes forward, you mentioned two by name and then mentioned other projects, if only one of those projects is prepared to go forward, what is your, from ADA's perspective, I know you're not speaking on behalf of any of those companies, but from ADA's perspective, if only one of those companies is ready to go forward, is that enough funding to build, to go forward with building the road, or are they going to have to wait for a second company or more?
Through the chair, the answer is it depends which mine. So they vary in size. The Bornite mine has a very significant amount of copper, and copper price is high right now. The Arctic mine, I think less so, but they're still exploring. The Roosevelt project on the eastern side could potentially be massive. That's 250,000 acres of state mining claims that South 32 is pursuing. And one other difference, if I could, Madam Chair, mention is that some of the mine companies involved on the Ambler project have significant financial ability and may or may not be able to pay for much of the project without needing ADA funding. So it's a very different factual situation than the Red Dog mine, where we had one mine, one company that was struggling with low mineral prices at the time. Here we have multiple mine companies, different financial abilities, and South 32 is a multi-billion dollar company located out of Australia.
Follow-up.
And I had a couple of similar questions relating to ADA's purchase of a lot of the leases in the Arctic Refuge. My general understanding of ADA's thinking on this was buy the leases and then see if there's some other company that might be happy to purchase them from ADA and follow through with development. Have I got that accurate about ADA's picture on purchasing the leases?
Through the chair, Senator Clayman, ADA selling out its interest in the leases completely or assigning that interest is legally possible. There are other options as well, where ADA is basically a silent partner, perhaps a minority junior partner, and a much larger company in the business of developing and producing oil and gas is the majority partner. So a couple different options.
Follow up?
In that context, and I won't ask, well, what is the current timeline on any agreement? What's the current timeline on ADA entering into any agreement about starting developing on any of those leases?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Clayman. So ADA has conducted and has a preliminary report on oil and gas reserves on our leases. I'm happy to share that with the committee. It is a public document. It estimates roughly 4 billion barrels of recoverable oil on ADA's leases and 7 trillion cubic feet or so of natural gas. So we have some very encouraging preliminary results. We need to confirm those resources, and we have an area identified on our leases that we need to do 3D seismic. Once we do 3D seismics, which should be this next winter, we'll be able to process the seismic and confirm the resource. And we think at that point, if not sooner, but hopefully at that point at the latest, we'll be able to find a partner for developing that oil and gas.
Follow up?
But as we sit here today, ADA has not entered into any agreements with a partner for those developments.
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, no.
Thank you.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Back to Ambler Access Road. Will there be an independent analysis of the likely costs and benefits of the proposed Ambler Access Road project prior to issuing any revenue bonds?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, there will be an analysis that will be done by experts and consultants. I don't know or believe that any of our statutes require us to hire an independent third party outside of ADA consultants and contractors, but the project's large enough, we're definitely going to want to check the numbers and the estimates. So we may have a estimating company that specializes in that type of work, you know, take a look at that.
Follow up, Senator Wilkowski.
My understanding that there was an independent analysis of likely costs and benefits done prior to ADA funding Red Dog Road in Port. Is that your understanding?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I'd have to look. I know there was a fiscal plan, financial plan done, some type of analysis, certainly of the resource and other things and costs. I'd have to go through our files and try to pull out exactly whether it was ADA consultant hired analysis or if it was in kind of a third-party Cominco analysis. I'm just not sure, but there was a lot of work done on Red Dog before it went forward.
I'll just interject. I'd suggest you check with the Department of Natural Resources, who I believe did that analysis as the first time before a permit was issued that a government required that kind of analysis. It's now part of the requirements for going forward with a project like that. Further questions, Senator Wilkowski? So just going back to Ambler, there was some question about access through the property. I understand Doyon had questions about the road, and only recently was agreement reached. So I also recall that there was a press release recently about the road being specified as an industrial road, only not a public access. What can you elaborate on any of that?
Through the chair, I'm going to actually let Kent take this question. He's been working on this quite a bit.
Thank you.
Senator Giesel, Kent Sullivan again, General Counsel for ADA. With regard to your question, the intent of the Ambler Access Project is for the road to be a private industrial access road. Unlike some of the other projects that ADA has, including the West Susitna Access Road and even Red Dog, the Ambler Access Project is a little bit more complicated in that it's a 211-mile-long road. It passes through multiple land ownerships, including two Alaska regional corporations. And so there's a lot of issues that are involved with this project that aren't necessarily involved with other projects. Namely, one of the primary ones from both Nana and Doyon's perspective is subsistence. And subsistence for the shareholders and the villagers along the project and potential impacts to subsistence from the project. And so one of the key considerations and requests by both Nana and Doyon to support the project has been to virtually reduce or eliminate impacts to subsistence from the project. And one of those primary concerns and one of the primary ways that those entities wish to do that is to have the road be a private industrial access road. And so ADA has been very involved in working with those corporations to ensure that we recognize the importance of subsistence to them and that we try to do everything possible to reduce the impacts to subsistence. And one of the ways is to make this a private industrial access road. And so that's one of the things that's been agreed to early on in this project, is recognizing that this road will be, should the project move forward, a private industrial access road. And without this road being a private industrial access road, this project would not move forward because it would not have the support of Nana and Doyon, and would not have support of the villages along the route. And so that's been a key consideration, and that's been one of the concessions that's been made early on with this project, is to ensure that this project is done as a private industrial access road.
Thank you. So I believe Mr. Raro commented a few minutes ago about having all of the permits and access along the route. So you've reached agreement with Doyon and Nana related to access to the land on the road route?
Senator Giesel, and through the chair, we are in the process of doing that right now. There's ongoing discussions about all the considerations that all the stakeholders are seeking to have as far as involvement in the road, its long-term construction, its financing, its maintenance, its use, its ownership. Those discussions are occurring right at the moment. We've had extensive meetings in the last couple months with Nana and Doyon and all the stakeholders in doing that. So yes, those are underway, and we're having those discussions right now.
Thank you. All right. Why don't we move on? We have about 15 minutes left for this presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Slide 18 is just some estimated revenue and job statistics from development of our Anwar leases and Anwar, the coastal plain as a whole. Very significant dollar amounts, combined royalties and state of Alaska taxes at roughly $2 billion a year. That would also contribute some funds into the permanent fund. And those numbers were generated before the reconciliation bill became federal law, which gave ADA another, or not ADA, but gave the state another 20% share of the royalties for a 70-30 split starting, I believe, in 2034. Next page, slide 19, is some potential benefits from the Ambler Access Project. Significant number of jobs, annual wages, mining tax revenues, estimated total tax and royalty revenue over $1 billion. That's not annually, that's over a number of long period of years.
Thank you. On the Ambler, though, just to solidify perhaps the answer, you have not committed to any bonding related to Ambler Access Road, and before you do, you will expect some equity being placed in the project by the mining companies themselves.
Through the chair, that's correct. We anticipate there'll be some equity pledge and a pledge of assurance to back the whatever bonding financing mechanism is used. That could look like the Red Dog model, where the mine committed to back 100% of the debt, or it could look like the Department of Energy model, where they're contributing 15% in equity, 5% to ADA, and 80% to the federal government.
Thank you. So I know this was before your time, but in the past, ADA has built grain silos and also a seafood processing plant in the middle of Anchorage. Were those projects, was equity investment required in those by the developers?
Through the chair, I honestly don't know the answer to that. Okay. Mr. Davis has a much longer history at ADA than I do. He may be able to answer that.
Well, I tell you what, how about if you give me that in writing? We do have limited time right now, but if you could answer that, that would be of interest to me. Thank you.
Yes. Yes, Madam Chair.
So I think we're on slide 21 now.
Correct. This is just for the committee's awareness that ADA is working on some very interesting projects, including geothermal energy at Mount Augustine, the Alyeska methanol plant, And we're building a model and looking into options for data centers. We do have a very small one planned for Cordova using excess hydro power there. While it's small, it will still generate a fair amount of revenue for the city and the utility, which will bring down electricity rates for people in Cordova. So that's a model using excess power where it exists, and it's not every community, but there are particularly several coastal communities with excess hydro where we want to replicate that. And we think we can help bring down energy costs and generate revenue for those communities.
Thank you. The committee is aware of what's going on in Cordova in terms of their excess. What is Ada's involvement in that?
So through the chair, Ada's involvement is we're financing the purchase of the equipment for the company GreenSpark that will be installing it in Cordova.
Thank you.
The remaining slides, Madam Chair, are just some examples of revenue from different data centers and sizes. It's roughly 2 to 3 million net per megawatt is what we're seeing. There's a lot of variables that go into that, but that's a rough average for a data center.
And Senator Wilkowski, did you have a question?
I did. Yeah, thank you. You had energy two slides back where you mentioned, and I think it was 2 years ago, last session or the session before that, we passed a bill giving Ada the authority to be involved in Cook Inlet gas development. And just curious if you can give us an update on that.
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, the bill did pass. It is on the books. What we're finding for companies such as Hex, Cook Inlet, Fury, is that we can use other financing tools, such as a revolving line of credit, to finance his drilling efforts. So we haven't had anyone apply yet for that type of financing, but it is a tool that we'll use if and when, you know, it's appropriate. It's good to have those on the books.
Thank you. All right. Are we at slide 23?
Right. I think I can basically just sum up, Madam Chair. We are busy at Ada. We're looking at opportunities wherever we can find them to achieve our mission. There's a dynamic that's very interesting right now, which is that the tariff, imposition of tariffs by the president on other countries has resulted in many countries pledging to invest in the United States to try to possibly reduce their tariff burden. And so we do see countries such as the UAE or Korea or other countries that are calling or inquiring, you know, what projects do you have in Alaska? And can you help us, guide us, you know, to investing? So in a way, it's a very interesting time where some entities are interested in building in Alaska, but they don't need ADA funds. So it's a bit of a very exciting time, I think, for Alaska.
Thank you. The UAE might be a little distracted with some other issues right now.
That's correct, yes.
But let me ask you what might be on the horizon as far as ADA investing in a gas pipeline from the North Slope.
Sure. Madam Chair, we have no pending applications. I think, frankly, the size of the project, the scope of the project is probably would quickly outrun ADA. It doesn't mean we're not keeping an eye open for opportunities, but presently we do not have a pending application.
Thank you for that. Further questions, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It seems that ADA has been involved in joining or filing a number of lawsuits in the last couple of years. What lawsuits has ADA joined in or have they filed in the last 2 years?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we've been a defendant, unfortunately, many more times than we've been a plaintiff. In fact, I can't think of a case where we've been a plaintiff. We have managed to solve some project issues that were needed to be resolved, such as the Mustang project. We were able to solve that. We were a defendant in that case. We were a defendant in the Anwar cases. We're a defendant in the Ambler cases. So I don't know that we've actually initiated any litigation.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
Has ADA been involved at all in any Pebble Mine litigation?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, there is a case, I believe at least one pending, involving Pebble Mine, where ADA filed an amicus brief and basically asserted that under the Statehood Act, the state had a right, has a right to develop its resources. And that follows some similar decisions on that issue out of Utah from 1979 and other cases where federal courts have held that a Statehood Act's, the promises made in a Statehood Act by Congress to allow a state to develop its resources cannot simply be taken away. And so that's a principle that we felt was important enough to file an amicus brief. It's not specific. The concept isn't specific to Pebble. Pebble is just a case where that issue is present. We would have probably asserted that concept in a different case. But the general principle is that when the federal government promises a state land and mineral resources, subsurface mineral resources for development, that it should follow through with that promise.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
What other amicus briefs has ADA been involved in the last 2 years?
Through the chair, I think that there may have been two separate cases involving Pebble where there was an amicus filed. Maybe a court of claims case by the Department of Law. And then this most recent amicus.
Thank you.
Further questions, Senator Klayman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tell me a little bit about ADA's relationship with banks when there's a project and a bank may be ready to loan on the project. And is ADA going to potentially offer the person developing the project a lower interest rate than the bank? And how often does that occur?
Sure. So through the chair, Senator Klayman, ADA does have a specific statutory program that is called the Loan Participation Program. And in that program, ADA partners with Alaska banks to provide a combined package of financing to a borrower. It's been a very successful program. And essentially what happens is you may have a business that perhaps is on the edge of penciling out under the traditional bank loan, or the bank is concerned about taking on too much of an amount of the loan, so they want to partner with us and reduce their risk and blend down, you know, the overall interest rate. And so that's, again, a statutory program, the Loan Participation Program. We've had zero defaults in that. I think we've financed over 800 Alaska businesses over the years with that program.
Follow up, Senator Klayman?
So in that program, I'm making up a number, a $10 million loan, somebody's got a project and can't quite get there with the bank. ADA gets involved in the program you're describing. Is there a consistent pattern for how much ADA would put in on a $10 million loan and how much the bank would put in? I'm assuming in this scenario that the full $10 million loan from the bank isn't available. And now how much does ADA need to put in to get the bank to sign up?
Sure. So through the chair, Senator Klayman, it'll vary based on individual loans, but I think statutorily it can go up to as much as 75%.
Follow-up, Senator Klayman.
What is the most common pattern that you see in the portfolio that ADA has on these? Is ADA typically coming in as the larger participant in the loan or more often the smaller participant?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, the pattern I've seen is that ADA is usually coming in as the larger participant.
Follow-up.
And usually at the 75% level?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Follow-up.
Has the has ADA ever taken the approach of trying to figure out what is the minimal ADA participation to get the bank in, rather than ADA going 75%? Let's just say the bank would come in if ADA came in at 25%. So ADA is only putting in 25%, and the bank is putting in 75%. Is there a practice in ADA to try to have its investment be the minimum amount to get the loan together?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, that is a number that we look at, and you know, we have to work from that number. So if we see that the loan simply won't work if we don't go to a certain percentage, then we'll usually go to that percentage to try to make, you know, the financing for the business available.
Thank you.
All right, further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Roraro and Mr. Sullivan, and also Mr. Davis, who is online. Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you.
Next up is Senate Bill 158, Cook Inlet, New Administrative Areas. This is the, I believe, the second, and it's probably the third hearing of this bill. I would invite Senator Bjorkman and his staff to come forward, just give us a brief reminder of the bill, and we are going to have public testimony on the bill today.
Thank you, Chair Giesel, and members of the esteemed Senate Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Jesse Bjorkman, and I represent the northern and central portions of the Kenai Peninsula. Very briefly, Madam Chair, this bill creates a new administrative area on the east side of Cook Inlet for the purpose of allowing the set net permit holders in that area to have some self-determination about what they would like to do with their permits, and to stop other permit holders in the upper district of Cook Inlet from entering their area for the purpose of additional fishing in that area if they were to do any kind of fleet reduction or other measures. It creates a new administrative area, and essentially would kind of freeze in that number of permits there so that other permits could not move over and fish in that area. Thank you.
Thank you. We did have an amendment deadline of noon today. I received no amendments for the bill. So I'm going to open public testimony now. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 158? Seeing no one, I'll go online. The first person who has signed up is Andy Hill. He is a board member of Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association, and he's calling in from Anchorage. After Mr. Hall will be Mark Donner, who is calling in from Palmer. First up, though, Andy Hall. Welcome, Mr. Hall. If you would identify yourself for the record, your affiliation, and give us your testimony, I am going to ask you to limit it to 2 minutes.
All right. Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak. Just for clarity, my name is Andy Hall with an A. I think you said Hill at the beginning. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I've started fishing, set netting in Cook Inlet in 1981. My wife and I and my two children own 4 permits. We've been sitting on the beach for years, and I don't see an end to it. This legislation would give the Eastside set net fishery and its managers the ability to manage this very unique fishery and provide some predictability and protections. There are currently 700 permits. Clearly, you know, if you've been around as long as I have, even since 81, the state's population has tripled. There's a lot of pressure in Cook Inlet, a lot of it focused on the Kenai between dip netting and sport fishing. And frankly, their numbers are better than ours. There are 700 of us. And if I were you looking for votes, and I'd like to think it's more than that, but the reality is we're a small group of people who are carrying the entire burden of what's happening right now. I would love to have the opportunity to try to create a dignified exit from this fishery. The onus will be on us to find a way to reduce our fleet and treat people fairly, but I would ask you to support this because I don't see any other way out of this, and I don't like sitting on the beach. when I have hundreds of thousands of dollars invested in this, my fishing operation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hall, for your testimony. Next up is, as I said, Mark Donner calling in from Palmer. After Mr. Donner, we'll hear from Brian Gabriel. Mr. Donner, welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Senate Resources Committee. My name is Mark Donner. I currently live in Palmer, Alaska, and I'm representing myself in this testimony. However, I'm confident that my testimony will also resonate with a large number of other Eastside Satnetic families. I listened in to the Senate Resources meeting that was held on February 15th at teleconference in regards to this bill, and during that hearing, Senator Kawasaki asked a question that had something to do with the value of a Cook Inlet Eastside Satnet permit and the options available to a permit holder who had most recently fished on the east side. Now, I apologize. I looked for the exact wording. I couldn't find a transcript, and I tried to scroll through the audio, and I couldn't find it. So I don't in any means want to put words in his mouth that aren't his, so correct me if I'm wrong and clarify if I'm way off. His question did get me thinking of how I would explain the options available to me as an Upper Cook Inlet Satnet permit holder. As I see it currently, my options are to fish somewhere else in the inlet with my permit, to sell my business, or to hold on to my permit, not fish, and hope for the opportunity soon to fish in the future. As you can imagine, this has been a frequent discussion in our house during the past 4 years when we have not been going down to the beach. To fish somewhere else in the inlet, I would need to find available locations and then develop infrastructure and logistical support that I already have in place at my current site. I'm not interested in duplicating those costs or those efforts. As far as selling my business, permit prices are sitting somewhere between $10,000 and $15,000 per permit. As you might be able to imagine, there's not a lot of demand for used Satnet gear, and the current value of my Satnet locations on the east side is zero. So I wait, hoping for the future opportunity to fish. Now, why would someone do this? Last summer, I drove down onto the Kenai and visited the storage lot where the equipment for my Satnet operation is set idle since July of 2022. I could barely see my skiff, my buoys, my nets through the overgrown brush. What do I do with this stuff? The burden of caring for idle gear, that's heavy. However, the toughest thing about visiting my overgrown, rusting, and rotting gear was not how little I could sell it for. The toughest part was one wandering through our cabins and feeling the flood of grief at the loss of the opportunity to fish.
Mr. Donner,
memories of fishing with my granddad, my mom, my dad.
Mr. Donner?
Pardon me?
Mr. Donner,
yes.
Your testimony time is done. Could you wrap up, please?
I will. Thank you. Commissioner Haight estimated the profit to be around $15,000 per permit. I'm holding out because the value of this fishery is much higher than that. I want to fish with my grandkids, and I believe that Senate Bill 158 might give the Board of Fish and ADFG a more finely tuned faucet to be able to manage this fishery. So I support Senate Bill 158.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up, we have Brian Gabriel. He's calling in from the Kenai. Mr. Gabriel, welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Senate Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Brian Gabriel. I reside at 2305 Watergate Way, Kenai, Alaska, and I'm here before you in support of SB 158. My wife and I have satneted in Upper Cook Inlet for 39 years, and I'm here representing myself. So, I think what I would have to do is describe this legislation as a natural evolution to management in the Cook Inlet Satnet fisheries and possibly statewide fisheries in the future. So if we start at the last point of significant management changes in the Alaska commercial fisheries, that would be the institution of limited entry. And at that time, we were about 15 years removed from fish traps. And there was a recognition to limit the number of new entries, to not only reduce the possibility of overfishing, but mainly to have reasonable expectation of viability for participants in the fisheries. So a little over 50 years ago, limited entry was enacted. So what's changed in 50 years? Well, in Cook Inlet, Over 50 years ago, the harvest pie was almost entirely commercial harvest. Today, that harvest pie has significantly shifted to accommodate personal use, sport, fish, and subsistence. This isn't entirely unexpected considering population growth and access to Cook Inlet stocks. By enacting SB 158, we're taking a step to make Cook Inlet fisheries a more orderly fashion, the management of Cook Inlet fisheries more orderly. Currently, I'm allowed to move my permit to other areas of Cook Inlet, West Side, Northern District, Lower Cook Inlet, up to the point I actually start fishing. There are approximately 700 sunnet permits for Cook Inlet and approximately 430 consistently registered for the east side. But when management decisions are made for the east side sunnet fishery, there's a worst case scenario that 700 permits could flood our fishery. That is unlikely, but still possible. SB 158 would essentially establish the number of permits in this area consistent with current participation numbers. But I would also like to point out before I close is that back in about 30 years, the early 1990s, we could move our permits all around without registering into Cook Inlet. As a matter of fact, I used to take my permits and I fished the early run on the west side for sockeye in June. Then I'd fish my fishery on the east side in July, and then I'd go up to the Northern District and fish silvers in September. And what happened was the board realized that too many people were going over and fishing essentially that early big river sockeye fishery. So they instituted the registration, which is essentially, made people going from the east side discontinue that practice. So there's sort of a semi-precedent, I guess, if you will, for this. And I also want to say that, point out that this bill does not change or affect allocation of fish between user groups. And I'd like to close by thanking Senator Bjorkman for bringing this forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gabriel. That is the end of the list of folks that have signed up to testify on this bill. So I will close public testimony. Do members have any final questions for the bill sponsor or his staff? Seeing none, Senator Wilikowski, I will look for a motion.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 158, version 34-LS0519 /I from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes. Legislative legal has the authority to make any technical and conforming changes.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, this Senate Bill 158 will move from committee. We will sign the documents before leaving. But at this time, this is the end of our agenda for today. The meeting for this coming Friday, March 6th, has been canceled. Just making you aware of that. The next meeting, however, will be Wednesday, March 4th at 3:30. We will hear two bills. Senate Bill 253, sulfur content of marine fuel. And Senate Bill 161, prohibit bottom trawling. So at this time, the meeting will stand adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 4:42 p.m.